You steal music, don't you? You're bad. Stop it. I'm hauling your sorry tuchus to court. Sorry, I didn't mean to hassle you. I'm just trying to give you a flashback to 2003. You know, post-Napster, pre-iTunes, and back when the RIAA still knew how to sue a 12-year-old. Today is March 24th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. I'll remind you one more time before we start. This is the last week of our listener survey. The link is posted up in the show notes, and you can win an iPod Nano. Help us out. Help yourself out. Do a little dance. Let's get into it. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, or to find the link to that listener survey, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. With the iTunes Music Store's third year birthday around the corner, it's not a bad time to be bringing up some of the old questions about downloading digital music, and there's no question more fundamental than the one about digital rights management, or DRM. So in the spotlight this week, what's up with DRM? Has the marketplace made the right choices? Where are we headed? How will we get there? And who stole my cheese? Hey, cheese actually sounds pretty good right now. I'm kind of hungry. DRM is the layer of software that prevents you from freely sharing or stealing music over the internet. The iTunes Music Store, for example, sells audio content encoded in the open standard called AAC, but it locks that content with a technology it calls FairPlay, so that the only jukebox it plays through is iTunes, and only on computers explicitly authorized by the owner of that content. A single music buyer can authorize up to 5 computers. Apple maintains the database of which computers are authorized to play music owned by which consumers. And most iTunes customers probably know this already, but it's easy to circumvent DRM because the owner of the music is allowed to burn copies of the songs to CD, at which point he can re-encode them in any format he wishes. And of course, Apple's FairPlay is not the only DRM out there. Microsoft also has a DRM technology built into its proprietary audio format, Windows Media Player, or WMA. Anyway, if this is the season to be thinking back to the big questions about how best to do digital downloading, this week's news gave us the perfect excuse. Early this week, the French Parliament approved a bill that would open proprietary digital rights management formats, including Apple's FairPlay. The bill is not yet law. It awaits approval by the French Senate, which could take several weeks. One aspect of the bill is aimed at prohibiting proprietary copy protection schemes. For example, the fact that songs purchased through iTunes only play on the iPod. Such a clause could force Apple, Sony, Microsoft, and any other company that uses its own proprietary formats to open them to competitors. The proposed law does not explicitly require companies to open their formats, but it does include provisions so that anyone can petition the courts to impose compliance. The bill also includes provisions for copyright holders, including a prohibition on owning or using any application that can bypass copy protection. Unfortunately, the wording is vague enough that Apple's iTunes application could be considered an illegal piece of software because, for example, it allows burning unprotected audio CDs. The bill grew out of concerns about monopoly control over the music market. Apple, of course, feels differently. Indeed, the company felt strongly enough to take the unusual step of issuing a statement on the subject. A spokesman said, "The French implementation of the EU copyright directive will result in state-sponsored piracy. If this happens, legal music sales will plummet just when legitimate alternatives to piracy are winning over customers." I don't know. That language sounds a little excessive to me. The good news for Apple is that the political winds in the U.S. appear, at this stage, to be on Apple's side. During an interview on the CNBC network, U.S. Commerce Secretary Carlos Gutierrez praised Apple for speaking out against the proposed French law, saying, "I would compliment that company because we need for companies to also stand up for their intellectual property rights." The conventional wisdom is that Apple will shut down the French iTunes Music Store before opening FairPlay to competitors. This move would, of course, reduce the number of music and video downloading options available to French consumers, which is not, presumably, the outcome that the French Parliament had in mind. Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster, among others, reacted to the news, assessing the impact as minimal. Mr. Munster estimates that approximately 20% of iPod and iTunes sales occur outside of the U.S., and that the French market accounts for less than 2% of iPod and iTunes business. He believes Apple will forfeit that market rather than start what could be a slippery slope of other countries passing similar legislation. By the way, Apple's stock closed the week down at $59.96 a share, U.S., in the 50s, for the first time since early last November. So that's the week's news, but this whole debate is screaming to get some context. The fair use of digital media is an outrageously complex subject, and it seems like just about everyone out there has an axe to grind. But one of my favorite sparring partners on this subject happens to be TMO's editor, Brian Chaffin, who's joining me this week in the Context Machine. Brian, welcome back.
Good to be here, Ricky. Thanks for having me.
Like I said, this is a really complicated subject, and what I'd like to do is break this discussion up into three parts. And the first one is the context part of it, the logistical considerations here. So we know that there's this law out there that looks like it's probably going to pass the French Senate and become French law. And the first question is, what is this going to require media providers like Apple to do? And so we might as well talk about this from Apple's perspective. For example, I can think of three general kinds of things that Apple might be required to do. It could be required to rewrite software. It could be required to change the way it builds its hardware, or maybe to share information about its hardware or software technologies with other companies. Among those things, what do you believe is required if Apple were forced to comply with this law?
Well, the biggest thing that should be required really is it really should all be on the software side. It's going to have to allow other hardware developers to be able to play Fair Play encrypted songs on their MP3 players, their digital media devices. But it's also going to have to make the iPod play downloads from competing download services. So both of those are really software issues. It would have to, in effect, share some of its technology while at the same time opening up its own hardware to play other people's downloads.
So in terms of, say, the dollars involved or the hours involved, presumably if it had to change the hardware it was building, that would be a much bigger deal. Would this require Apple or other companies to put in a lot of manpower and effort making their player compatible with other software or sharing information so that other companies can do the same thing?
Maybe. I honestly think that would be more on the trivial side. It's possible that Apple would have to actually add in another chip in order to support WMA or some other Sony's digital rights management scheme. I don't really think that's going to be the big barrier. I don't really think that man hours or anything like that is going to have a material impact on everyone's equations, to be honest.
All right, so now let's move on. The second part of this that I see is a legal debate or a philosophical or an ethical debate, and it's the debate about fair use versus intellectual property. And for those that haven't heard these terms before, heard them in this context, fair use would refer to, if I buy a song off of iTunes or anywhere else, I want to be able to play it on any computer I want. I want to be able to play it on any media player that I want to. I want to be able to listen to it in my car or wherever. The idea that the use of that media, once I've bought the content, should be free, versus the intellectual property rights of the content creators or the content owners, the people that own the music or own the videos, want to make sure that it's not possible or that it's at least difficult to steal that music or share it broadly. And so I guess let's begin with this. Brian, if memory serves, you're not exactly impartial on this debate of fair use versus intellectual property. So can you give us sort of the elevator speech, the executive summary of how you feel about DRM and about the state of DRM right now?
I hate it. I hate it all.
I'm not really fond of DRM in any form or function. DRM basically, it does two things. It first of all assumes that I'm a thief, and secondly is designed to exact utter control over a piece of media to the copyright, the intellectual property holder of that copyrighted material. I am not a thief. My music is bought and paid for. I prefer to actually usually buy my music on CDs and rip it, so that way if some new technology comes along in the future, I'm able to re-rip it and actually go ahead and you know, be able to keep up with the technology as we go. Plus, I like having a physical copy of my music so that if anything were to happen to my computers, goodness forbid, I would be in a position to still have that music in the future. So,
now, incidentally, I'm going to interrupt you just briefly. For some of the listeners who may not be aware of the encoding issues here, one of the things I think you're talking about is the idea that as new technologies come along, it may be possible to re-encode your music so that it has higher quality with the same amount of space or the same number of megabytes to hold that music as before. And there are issues if you move from MP3 to AAC back to WAVE and so forth. Moving among those encodings can degrade the quality of the audio. And so I assume that that's one of the issues that you're concerned about with holding that physical copy.
Specifically, every time you encode a tune, at least with the most of the current technologies that are available, those are lossy formats, just like a JPEG. Every time you save a JPEG and make changes to it, you're losing a little bit of information. The same is true with a song. If you keep anyway, you actually said it. So they are lossy formats. So when Apple actually introduced AAC, which I have found to have a better sound quality than MP3, I went from having ripped all of my songs in I think actually a lot of them were actually at 128K. MP3 files, I went to 192 AAC files, and it was a trivial matter for me to go ahead and actually redo my entire collection this way in order to match this this new technology. And I'm sure at some point, and since that time, Apple has actually introduced a lossless format, which produces files that are too big for me at this point. But you know, that's another example of another a new development coming that could prompt me to actually redo the whole thing again.
Yeah. So, and on top of all of this, so you're the basic argument, and I want to make sure that we crystallize this part for the purposes of the debate that's going on out there. If I could summarize, it sounds like you're saying the idea of DRM assumes that you're a thief. And then puts restrictions on not just how you listen to your music, but also your ability to keep your music technologically current and keep it in high quality.
Yeah, and one must understand that the piracy issue has been a red herring for the music industry from the get-go. The issue was never really piracy. The music sales weren't falling because of piracy. Music sales were falling because the record companies were jacking up the prices of LPs to astronomically high levels. I'm sorry, LPs, boy, I'm old. CDs, that is. They cut the number of acts that they were releasing by, you know, a huge percentage. They were releasing the same old crap. The radio industry is controlled by only a few companies, so very little new music was getting exposed this way. There are all these reasons that were contributing to falling profits and falling sales for the music industry. Very little of it had to do with piracy. As a matter of fact, when Napster first hit the scene, music sales actually increased, something that the music industry did its best not to to spread. And it wasn't until they continued to raise their prices and they continued to cut down the number of acts that they were releasing, that music sales started going down again. So all this is a red herring. What they really want to do is they want to be able to force me to pay for a copy of a song on my computer, buy another copy for my car, buy another copy for my home stereo. If they could do all that, that's their ultimate goal. That's their dream, because it makes them the most profit for the least amount of work for them. That is their ultimate goal. That's what they would have if there was any way possible for them to have. And it's not at all what I as a consumer want. Established fair use, which you briefly touched upon, says that once I've bought a book or a movie or a song, that I can shift that to other forms of media if I want to. For instance, it's legal for me to take a CD and drop it to a cassette. Not that I use cassettes anymore, but I could. It's legal for me to take a song and rip it to my computer. Same kind of thing. As long as I've properly bought that, I can shift it to other ways to view, read, see, whatever, that piece of copyrighted material. And DRM actually stops me from doing this. Now, Apple's DRM is the least restrictive out there. Apple did find a pretty good middle ground with the music industry that does allow me to have just it certainly is more flexibility than I need. I can play my songs on up to 5 Macs, and I think that's the current one. I know I'm supposed to know these things, but
yeah, you can stream it to 5 Macs and burn CDs. And in fact, this is I was going to pick up from here, because I wanted to point out that my observation has been during the last few years, as Apple has been running the music store, I actually have felt that Fair Play strikes a pretty good balance. And my position on DRM, just to set up something of a debate here, is that I think it is. I see the intellectual property side of this in the sense that I do feel that it's important for content owners to have some way to at least make it difficult for people to share music indiscriminately.
Well, I've got to stop you right then and there, because the music industry, since the beginnings of popular culture, has been utterly dependent on people sharing music. Who do you find new albums from? You certainly don't hear it on the radio anymore. It used to be that the radio was a good source to find new bands, and you find the radio station you like and you listen to it, and you get exposed to new things and you end up buying them. But even while that was the case, friends giving friends copies of music that they would then turn around and be interested in, and many of whom would turn around and go and buy either back in the day, an LP or, a CD or whatever of that same tune. That was another hugely important way for people to find new music. Now, the content, all the big media companies basically came to accept that as a necessary evil, even though they did try to stop it at various points. They tried to stop cassettes. They tried to stop burnable CDs. Just like the movie industry tried to stop VCRs because it said it was going to kill them. And of course, now they make enormous profits from the video industry itself. So making it difficult to share music is stupid. It benefits no one except for the people who want, again, to be able to make us have to buy a copy for each of our vehicles or each of our players out there. And that's never going to happen. I'm never going to buy 3 copies of a song in order to play it on my home stereo, my computer, and my my car. It's an idiot's outlook on how to make money. And now, personally, I feel like the big media companies are mainly idiots.
And I'd like to back up to something you said before. It's stupid to restrict people from sharing music, and that certainly makes sense. When I said share before, the concept I had in my head was the concept of stealing, and there is a distinction. There has to be a distinction between the sharing of music with the intention of introducing people to other music. Hey, I just downloaded this song. I just bought this song. You should really listen to this artist. He's awesome. Versus the situation that began to develop, particularly for people of my generation, which is slightly younger, for those of you who can't see us, which would
younger
be all of you.
Younger than me, at least.
than you, exactly. But there was certainly an attitude that developed a few years ago when Napster first got underway of, hey, I don't need to go buy music. I can just walk out there to one of the sharing services and, you know, I heard about this artist. Hey, I'm just going to go ahead and grab that music off of Napster.
Right. Well, let me cut to the chase.
The habit.
Let me cut to the chase on that. There is that. This is where the legitimate concerns of copyright owners do come into play. The difference between me giving a tune to my closest three friends and my closest million friends is obviously exponential. I would that is certainly a legitimate concern. The internet makes it possible for sharing to go way beyond the sneaker net, and the only counter I have to that is that, again, music sales actually went up when Napster first hit. The attitudes, especially among young people, that they are entitled to free crap is definitely a real issue, and it's an important issue. But it's an issue, I think, that has a lot more to do with the values that our society is imparting on people than it does for people to actually be able to download free music.
And that's true. But at the same time, I feel like I should point out that one of the reasons that societal sensation has grown up, hey, I don't need to pay for music, is because the technology is out there. And a lot of people, unless they're told explicitly, this is the wrong thing to do, you shouldn't do this, you're stealing. If someone just looks around and says, hey, wait a minute, I can get this song for free, there's no context around that, it's very unlikely
Absolutely.
To expect someone to say, oh, I'm not going to take that when it's free. I'm going to go over here and buy it.
This is absolutely true, Ricky, and I've encountered many people who definitely feel entitled to music. Why should I have to pay for this? Because they have no context. They have no ability to understand that producing this stuff actually does take time, talent, and money, etc. And that's definitely an issue, but then I would counter that by the fact that the music industry needs to be able to adapt to these changing societal and technological issues and move their business model. You know, paying $10 for a downloaded album is obscene. It's ridiculous. The music industry needs to come to grips with the fact that digital distribution allows them to sell songs for, you know, a nickel, a dime, a quarter at the most. Not a dollar.
Fair enough. Now, since we're talking about ideas of sharing versus stealing and how you have sharing without having stealing, given, as Steve Jobs said, one of the quotes related to the iTunes Music Store, when Steve Jobs released the iTunes Music Store, it was now almost 3 years ago, he said, you know, the good news about all of the music stealing that's going on is it's taught us something. The internet was apparently made to distribute music. It's really exciting when you think about it that way. Let's talk a little bit about maybe what could exist to create sharing without creating stealing. The first thing that comes to my mind, because this is what we're doing right now, is podcasting. If you go out there and you listen to podcasts, a lot of the shows out there that do music are based on the premise that an artist will send them their songs, allowing it to be played freely over a podcast. But then they request that you go and you buy the music separately to support the artist.
Yeah, the labels themselves actually have specifically and exclusively forbidden that practice. So it is up to artists to actually still control their music to do that sort of thing.
Well, and that's true. And I'm wondering if you see that as at least a version of sharing that would be amenable to all parties without allowing wholesale stealing. Because, of course, you're not going to go and send a 20-minute podcast or a 40-minute podcast to someone when you just want to say, hey, you should listen to this song.
Well, sure. I mean, that's certainly – it's, you know, that's one of the many, many things that have changed. You know, it's a new way for people to share music. It's a new way for people to do stuff. I don't think it's an answer, but it's certainly an answer. Did I say that right?
I don't think you did. I was just wondering how to point that out.
It's certainly not the answer, but it may be an answer. Let's try it that way.
All right. Well, I think we've beat that to death.
Yeah,
let's move
have.
On to the
let's get back to France.
Let's move on to the third part of this, and that's the kind of punditry that I see a lot of people out there on blogs and in the postings at TMO doing. This is the part where I want to talk a little bit about the business maneuverings or the political maneuverings behind all of this. So first of all, let's start from Apple's perspective. This French law says you have to open up your players to other people's formats. There has been a lot of evidence in the United States, particularly with Real Networks CEO Rob Glaser explicitly saying we would love to license Fairplay. There's evidence that people would like to license Apple's technology. Do you think Apple has any motivation or any reason to want to support Windows media formats or the Sony formats?
Absolutely and positively not. Rightly or wrongly, Steve Jobs' obsession is controlling the whole widget. You cannot look at this answer or look at this issue if you do not start and end with that premise. Because the Mac is a great computer because Apple controls the hardware and the software. The iPod is a great experience in part because Apple controls the hardware and the software. The iTunes Music Store and the iPod make a fantastic duo because Apple controls the hardware, the software, and the music store. So that's the proof in the pudding to Steve Jobs' vision. But it didn't even matter if there was a proof in the pudding because that's what he thinks is best. You just simply cannot go in any other direction than understanding that Apple's entire business model is predicated on the idea of them controlling the hardware and the software. Now, they don't control the hardware on Windows when it comes to iPod players using iTunes or iTunes users using iTunes on Windows, but they are still controlling at least the iPod and iTunes dynamic of that. And as far as this French law is concerned, I have zero doubt that Apple will simply stop iTunes in France. I'm not sure if they would have to. They may actually have to stop selling iPods in France too, because it, as I understand this law, and I definitely could be wrong because A, I'm not an expert on France, and B, I'm not an expert on law. I've never even played an attorney on TV. And they may actually have to stop selling iPods in France too, because it seems to me that this law would require iPods to be able to play downloads from other players, from other music services with other DRM schemes. And to me, it is very simple that Apple will pull out of the French market before they ever open up any of these things, before they ever license, especially if they're forced to, Fairplay, open up the iPod, whatever. They'll pull out of the market.
All right. Now, before we get more into that, I want to go back to this discussion about who's interested in licensing whose stuff. Let's look at that from the other side. How much – we know that other companies like Real Networks or Sony or Windows might have an interest in licensing Fairplay. I'm sorry, Microsoft, not Windows, might have an interest in licensing Fairplay. Do you think that that would help any of those services? I mean, is there any chance that if they suddenly could sell iPod compatible songs through their networks that those services would become more popular?
Maybe, at least possibly slightly more popular, but their music stores, their online outlets are still going to suck in comparison to iTunes. You know, Apple has got the lock on ease of use. To be honest, I haven't looked at any of the competing services in a while now. But the last times that I looked at any of the competing services, they're a nightmare. They're ugly. They're heinous. They're designed by Windows users and people who are accustomed to the idea of something being good enough. And I have no doubt that some of them would be able to sell a few more songs if they could play on the iPod, but I don't think it's going to be a some kind of big cornucopia opportunity for him.
All right. Now, Apple clearly opposes this law. And the first evidence of that, of course, is that it kept its DRM proprietary for 3 years. Mm-hmm. But then there was also this public statement that the company made earlier this week, which really caught my attention. The operative phrase was that this French law would, quote, result in state-sponsored piracy. Is that even a remotely fair evaluation?
No. It's it's beautiful manipulation on the part of Apple. You know, they've done a good job of these sort of self-serving public statements, you know, for a number of years. For instance, when they said that, I can't remember the exact statement, but basically Steve Jobs said that we don't make any money on music downloads, so I don't know why anyone would be stupid enough to get into this business. The reality is that Apple moves songs in such a volume that they are making a profit today. It's not an enormous profit, and the iPod is certainly the vast majority of profits from their music business, but it's not a loss leader for them like it was when it was first launched.
And of course, as it grows, it will make more and more. And as digital distribution becomes a bigger and bigger deal, if Apple retains 70% of that market or 80% of that market, it will become, those numbers will become very large in the future.
Yeah, plus videos and movies and TV shows, et cetera. So, you know, it's not, I mean, if the company has sold a billion tunes, you have to realize that's, you know, $650 to $700 million in cash flow that they've gotten. And cash flow is not a trivial issue for any company. Apple is doing better than probably any other company in managing its cash flow and having that cash flow make money for them. Generally speaking, they make their people pay immediately, and then they make their suppliers accept payment when they want to. And all that sort of stuff always leads to profits in some way or another, and Apple's been very good at doing that. So as far as the specific statement goes, state-sponsored piracy, if you look at it, we did an interview, and by we, I mean Jeff Gemmett, our morning editor, who has actually been doing almost all of the coverage of this issue for both iPod Observer and Mac Observer. He's actually really deserves a big hand in how fantastic a job he's done at covering this
issue. And that interview
for
us is fantastic. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's a really, really interesting interview.
It is a really interesting interview. And what the gentleman whose name is, and I'm reading, intellectual property expert William Hart from the New York office of Proskauer, and I'm assuming that's how it was pronounced, Proskauer Rose LLP. So what Mr. Hart suggested was that the idea of opening up all these DRMs really is going to open the door for them being broken. And it's going to open the door for because so many fingers are going to be in the pots, basically, that, or in the pie, whatever the correct analogy or metaphor is, that this is going to give more opportunities for these DRM schemes to be broken, which I think is certainly true. I mean, I agree with most of everything that he said. And that in and of itself could result in a lot of downloads making it directly to piracy networks, which of course would be the thing that the big media companies supposedly don't want.
Now, I had one other question. The principal question that I have in terms of sharing the technologies in these DRMs, for example, Apple's responsibility or potential responsibility to share fair play with other companies, many of the most secure software systems are either open source or the technology is publicly known, RSA, many of the security devices in Unix. And so my impression is that in many cases, sharing of software actually makes it more secure because the software has to be built such that it's intrinsically secure rather than relying on essentially secrets to keep things secure. Well, and I'm wondering if you think there's any possibility of that being the case, that it could actually make DRM more effective.
Well, I would actually change your wording, and I don't have a script in front of me of what you just said, but I would say that it could make things more secure. But what you're talking about is the difference between open source and various companies being able to have a crack at Fair Play or Windows Media Format or whatever. So there's a huge difference between that. You know, Microsoft is not going to be making Windows Media open source, the DRM scheme behind it open source, and Apple is not going to be making Fair Play open source. So the open source the benefits of being open source are not going to apply to this at all.
Fair enough. Now, there's another issue here, and you brought it up before. The conventional wisdom is that Apple will shut down the French iTunes music store before it opens, before it would ever decide to open up Fair Play. Now, to me, that seems like a pretty extreme step. We're talking about a company backing out of a marketplace. There was one analyst that, I think it was Gene Munster, said that 2% of its iPod iTunes business is in France, roughly. And he was saying it as in, oh, only 2% is in France. But that's 2% of a big number. And it's very rare to see a company just say, oh, the legal landscape has changed here. We don't want to do this. Goodbye.
Well, 2%. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you think that the situation is really such that it could drive Apple out of France?
Yeah, absolutely. 2% is a big number, and I appreciate the where you're coming from on this, but 2% versus the rest of the 98% is you know, makes that 2% inconsequential. If Apple were to have to do this in France, there is no doubt that other countries would try to follow in the same footsteps for whatever reasons they thought were, you know, were prudent. And I think Gene Munster used the term slippery slope for Apple. And I think that's probably absolutely correct. And the, you know, ironic thing is that this isn't going to achieve anything for French music listeners. I'm not going to go off on a tirade about France's wacky interpretation of reality, but this isn't going to achieve anything. The only players who are going to partake in this are the also rans. You know, Microsoft will probably also pull out. Although that said, Microsoft already, you know, makes Windows Media available to other people, but I don't think that Sony and Microsoft are going to turn around and collaborate and actually make things work. Sony is belatedly trying to follow in Apple's footsteps by tying its music store to its players. There's nothing in it for them either. What's going to happen is that the French people are going to suddenly lose some of these technological leaders. Now, it is very possible that in its place, because of that, because the heavyweights are going to be forced out of the market, that some of the little guys might actually grow up to be something more important in France. My guess is that there's just not going to be all that much available. And it'd be even funnier to me if all or a majority of French iPod sales started happening in England or Germany or Spain or, you know, someplace close, because all the European borders are you know, effectively non-existent today, depriving the result being that France itself would be deprived of all those tax revenues. So it's a farce of French proportions. So all our French listeners can send their hate mail to editor@macobserver.com. That's me.
Right on. All right. So now all of this discussion that we just had is predicated on the idea that Apple would lose market share or lose money or lose iPod sales, lose something if it were forced to open up Fair Play to other competitors. Now, in the past, Apple's argued that it hasn't been making money from the iTunes Music Store, but from selling iPods. Generally, people seem to accept that argument, that they're not making money on their music store. But right now, doesn't it seem like we're in a position where if Apple opened up Fair Play and allowed other people to download songs through Fair Play, that it would help sell their iPods in France? I mean,
well,
they're
actually
iTunes compatible.
That's songs. A point that that Apple itself made. Let's see. I'm going to read that here. Free. According to Apple, iPod sales are likely to increase as French consumers load up on interoperable songs that can't be adequately protected. Quote: free movies for iPod should not be far behind and will rapidly become the sponsor culture of piracy. That was the piracy quote that you were referencing earlier. But yeah, in theory, this could actually generate more sales for Apple. But again, in terms of Apple's business model itself, I just don't think that will happen. I don't think that Apple's going to make French iPods play WMA downloads and Sony downloads and Rhapsody downloads while the rest of the world can. That just doesn't make much sense to me. I still think that Apple would rather just pull out of the market in and of itself.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up now with sort of a step back, and I'd like to take a broader look at all of this stuff that we've been talking about. Like I said at the beginning, this is obviously a very large issue. But you were arguing at the beginning that you have issues with the concept of DRM, and then we went into this whole debate about the right way to do it, to allow sharing without stealing, and to allow music and other forms of media to flourish in digital form, in the digital downloading world. So I'd like to present the following question to you, which is, what do you think DRM is going to look like in the future? Are we looking at roughly the version of DRM that we'll see going forward, or do you think that it's likely to change over the years?
It's a great question, Ricky. I don't know that I have a specific answer on that. I certainly don't think that what we see now is going to be what we have in even 5 years, let alone 10 or 20. I think that it's possible that at some point DRM could be attached to an individual, so that, you could take copies of your media wherever it is that you can sign on to them. But, that sort of brings about some kind of heinous vision of Big Brother, hood, where all our computers are tied into some kind of central network that's controlling, what we play on it. I mean, that's a very real possibility.
And in fact, Apple keeps a database like that currently of authorized users and authorized computers for iTunes.
Yeah, but imagine that same database being for everything. Who's going to control that? What company is going to control that? What government arm is going to control that? I mean, right now it's people that choose to do business with Apple that choose to buy an iPod and choose to buy songs from iTunes. But now imagine that was the case with everything. Imagine that was like with all forms of media. And I mean, it's a nightmare situation in my opinion. And I personally, it's inevitable that people are going to become more and more comfortable with DRM, and that DRM is therefore going to grow. I think that's absolutely inevitable. What exact shape it takes, I don't know, but it's not going to be pretty, in my opinion.
Fair enough. And that happy word will have to be the last one. Brian,
fair
thanks
enough
for joining us.
Absolutely, Ricky. Thanks for having me. And again, I want to say a big thanks to Jeff Gammon for doing such a great job of covering this for us. And make sure that you read some of the links that Ricky's put together for all the various articles that we've done on this subject. It's an important one. You guys should pay attention.
Hear, hear. If you have questions about the news, you can send them to roundup@macobserver.com. And that's the news. To make room for all that discussion, I'm forgoing this week's product roundup. Sorry, kiddos. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. Check out the show notes at macobserver.com. Fill out that listener survey. It's your last week. Stay subscribed. And until next week, we'll see you online. So say it with me. One, two, three, check.
Wait, I'm supposed to say it with you?
Just the check part.
Just the check part, okay. All right, I'm ready this time.
All right, one, two, three, check. Great.
I said it with you so much, though, that I didn't even hear you.
That's great.
God, it's like we're in sync, man. we're simpatico.
We think exactly the same.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. That's funny. Oh, man.
This connection is fantastic, by the way. You sound terrific.
Well, thank you, Ricky. You know, you sound pretty good yourself.
Well, thank you. I think we got to put this into the show.
Okay. Oh, yeah.